Snakes. Landmines. And grass fires. A podcast about real estate.
Hello, everyone. Welcome once again to another episode of Snakes, Landmines, and Grass Fires. I'm here with my husband, Lester Langdon, world-famous broker, proprietor of Houstonius.com.
Good morning.
Or afternoon, whatever it is.
It's a great day, and my wife is the queen of the Poodle Ranch.
Most exciting was that I bought a hummingbird feeder yesterday, and we have three hummingbirds eating out of this feeder this morning. I'm so excited.
And are the poodles ignoring the...
Yes, the poodles are totally do not care about the hummingbirds.
They're just hunting squirrels.
They're so interested in getting a squirrel, but they'll never get one. So, yeah, but they keep trying. Every day they try to catch a squirrel.
How many poodles do we have?
We have 10 poodles today.
A herd of
yes,
poodles.
Yes, we do. Three of them are just little, though. So, I guess the world has changed.
Yes, the world has become much more complicated than
the
it was.
World has become complicated.
Than it was when I started 25 years ago.
Okay, evidently there's five skill sets that brokers, which is you, Lester Langdon,
and you,
and me as brokers, that affect buyers and sellers. And those five broker skill sets are, I'll go through those slowly, people, laws, institutions, real estate properties themselves, and technology that we deal with.
Yes, we have to know about those five areas.
Now, what are the people skills that you have to possess?
I have to ask questions, and I have to listen. If it sounds like I know everything, it's probably not true, and those people that sound like they know everything maybe have a confidence problem.
I got it.
And we have to learn by our mistakes, so it's not gonna help to argue with our clients or other agents or other brokers. I have an example here. I have a seller who overpriced her property higher than the price I had suggested. She really doesn't need the money right now. She increased the price by 25% over our suggested price range. 6 months later, she finally went down back to the price we suggested. And then 1 year later, it's now priced to sell. She paid property taxes and mortgage payments on a vacant property for 1 year. So the most important question we can ask is, when do you want the money?
Right. If you don't need the money right away, I guess you can afford to sit on it and pay property taxes for a while. But if you want the money now, listen to the broker, and they are very knowledgeable, and they will suggest the best price to move it.
And we gave her comparable sales in the neighborhood for the last 6 months. Actually, we went out to a year.
So do you let your sellers learn by their mistakes?
I make a suggestion as to what would be a correct price range, depending upon when they need the money, and they don't always take our advice. So then they have to learn by their mistakes.
So they have to go through what you would call the emotional stages, right?
We've talked about that before, and because we have another that has got a very expensive home, and he's a little overpriced also, but he'll figure it out.
Yes, he will.
I suggested a price, and he said, well, that'll never happen.
Uh-huh. And he's right. That'll never happen.
It may happen. He'll figure it out.
Eventually, the market will give you the correct price at which it will sell. So listen to your broker. But what do you say? You don't always know, do you?
Sometimes there's some very unique properties out there, and it's very difficult to determine value. For example, the house that we own, there's not another one like it, hardly. It's got a lot of dirt, and it was built in the last 3 years. And it's very hard to find houses with a lot of land that are recently built. One thing we can't use is the county appraisal district's values. That's why owners hire property tax consultants.
Yes, those people really don't fully understand each particular piece of property. They just kind of look at the average and go to a particular area. So, all right, well, I understand there is a list that we have made of all the 24 people that are involved in a real estate transaction.
That can be involved. They're not always involved in every transaction. So why don't you read a couple from our list, and then we'll make a couple of comments.
Okay. First of all, we know the buyer, of course, and the seller. Okay, that's two right off the top. The buyer's agent and the seller's agent. The title company.
And it's very important to pick the right title company because they can offer some services that other title companies cannot offer. There is a difference, even though they're regulated by the state.
The building inspector.
Yes, not all building inspectors are the same. Some will not crawl under a house that's on pier and beam. Some have thermal imaging gadgets that they hold in their hand to find places that have water leaks, but not all inspectors have those. Some inspectors have a device to determine if one side of the house is lower than the other side of the house. So we have to ask questions before we hire the building inspector.
And we have the bug inspector.
Yeah, I always have to make sure to tell the bug inspector, be there on time.
Why are bug inspectors not on time?
I don't know.
It's just the nature of
the
bug.
They just kind of show up.
And the mold inspector.
That's been an issue, hasn't it?
Yes, it has.
With the flooding that we've had in Houston.
Right. More mold than we ever had before. And the environmental consultant. Primarily in commercials. Properties.
Yeah, right. And, of course, it depends upon how quick you need it done and what they charge and what their services are.
The hydrostatic plumbing inspector.
There is a new form out that hydrostatic inspectors want signed that protects them from liability. Probably nothing's going to happen. All they really do is just fill up the toilets with water after they put a balloon in them. There's really no pressure of water. So we have to know about that form.
And on multi-property, you might have a city inspector or other commercial property.
On flooded properties, there are three inspectors that go out after a flooded property has been remodeled and rehabbed. You've got a building inspector, you've got an electrical inspector, you've got a plumbing inspector, and they all come from the city.
The utility companies get involved.
So the gas company will pull a meter if the gas hadn't been used in 6 months.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, it is. And before they'll put the gas meter back in, they make the owner do a gas pressure test on the entire building. And, of course, there's going to be small leaks on a very old building, and you may just have to put in electrical appliances instead of gas appliances.
Oh, boy. Another snake popping up there in the grass. And then, of course, we have the surveyor.
And there's different kinds of surveys. What are you going to use the survey for? On the house that we're in, that we own, the house is 2 or 2.5 feet higher than the rest of the property. And therefore, for us not to pay higher flood insurance, we may have to require a survey with an elevation certificate.
Then we have the 1031 tax deferred exchange, third party intermediary. That is a mouthful. And we've been through a whole podcast on that, I do believe.
Well, yeah, we hope to do another one this week. And there's not only 1031, but there's also 1033 tax deferred exchanges, which are more applicable if, in fact, you get a in income or a disbursement from an insurance company due to a flood.
I think that should be another podcast, 1033s. And we have the commercial mortgage broker or the residential mortgage broker.
The residential loans are more government regulated and the commercial loans are less regulated.
If you have a multifamily unit, we have property manager.
Or you can have property managers for people that help you if you're an absentee landlord on a house. You can hire managers to help you manage and maintain and rent your rent houses.
And we have the real estate attorney.
Be sure if you have an attorney on a real estate deal that they be a real estate attorney.
An insurance agent.
If you got a vacant house and it's been vacant for 2 or 3 months, you may think you've got hazard insurance. But if you read your insurance carefully, you may see that you have to call your insurance agent and get a rider to cover your vacant house because the price doubles or triples.
Then the bank brings in, or the loaning institution brings in a residential appraiser or commercial appraiser, depending.
Yeah, the years ago, a leading newspaper in Houston hired 10 appraisers to appraise the same property, and they were 20% apart. Oh, so really? You need to tell your appraiser the purpose of your appraisal. They need to know why you want their service.
Then we have, as we mentioned, residential lender or commercial lender. We already covered that. Maybe an owner's association.
They've gotten a lot of publicity. A lot of people like them, and a lot of people don't like them.
And then finally, you might need a locksmith to change the locks.
Yeah, I think that if you have a rental property, it's required by law that you change and rekey the locks.
Okay, so as we said, the world changed from 25 years ago, and one of the big areas those changes have occurred is the laws, taxes, trusts, and legal entities that are involved.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like a target. I wish I'd gotten a law degree so that I could have cheaper ammunition.
Or you could make more money by billable hours, right?
The residential contract was 5 pages, and now it's 9 pages, plus addendums, plus additional pages. The commercial contract is 14 pages and may have 6 additional pages. Well, it may have more than that. It could have addendums and amendments. And each year, the addendums and amendments are changed. Brokerage fees are now adding their own documents for their clients to sign and for my clients to sign. Some have added additional seller disclosure documents. Some have a final buyer home walkthrough acknowledgement. And I'm sure every week they're coming up with new forms asking my clients and their clients to sign them. And these are not forms that are required by any government entity.
So you're not supposed to give a legal opinion about those documents. Is that correct?
Yes, we are not attorneys, are we? We're brokers. We can't give legal opinions about any documents that are not promulgated by the Texas Real Estate Commission. But we sometimes have to talk about documents to our clients. So we just have to talk about them and say, oh, I'm not a lawyer. Talk to your lawyer.
Now, how many different types of written contracts and parts are there?
Between the Texas Real Estate Commission and the Texas Association of Realtors and the Houston Association of Realtors, there are more than 150 documents. And, of course, this doesn't include other brokerage forms that are requested by the other broker. Lenders have their own loan disclosure forms to be signed by borrowers and sometimes by sellers before closing. And, of course, there's property financial disclosures. There are also environmental disclosure questionnaires. So where are the red flags?
So where are the red flags? How do you know to avoid hidden snakes in the contract?
I think that just comes from many years' experience.
Should you check the sales contract box, which requires that the property appraise?
For a specific amount, especially when it's a unique property that has no comparable sales in the last 6 months.
Okay, so let's cover the government entities and government regulation concerns. Like we mentioned, you have the Texas Real Estate Commission.
And they have their forms, and those change every month. And the Harris County Appraisal District also has rules and laws and forms. There are federal rules and laws about everything, lending, fair housing, environmental pollution, flooding, etc. As an example, yesterday I spoke with a man who's we're going to help him sell some vacant land that's worth a lot of money. He's owned it for many years. He just found out that the Federal Emergency Management Agency has an easement on 3 acres of his property.
Whoa.
And he didn't know it.
Whoa. Did they just declare that or what happened?
He didn't know. He just found out.
Subtract those 3 acres out of the price.
Well, the buyer told him, and he said, I don't know anything about it. I'll find out.
Then we have the Texas Insurance Commission, and what do they deal with?
Title, ownership insurance, home insurance, flood insurance, and of course, I was asked to be a witness by the Texas Insurance Board when there was a bogus title company issuing fake and bogus title insurance policies.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. That was bizarre.
Wasn't that weird? It was a bogus title company. I went to the address of the title company selling the title insurance.
Supposed address.
And there was no such address. That's a whole story we can tell you about.
And then, of course, we have errors and omissions insurance.
Correct. And there are advertising laws that we have to abide by. And there are zoning laws in some cities. Fortunately, Houston doesn't have any zoning. They voted on that 3 times, and 3 times it's failed.
Yay.
And, of course, there are rules and laws concerning 1031 tax-deferred exchanges and third-party intermediaries. One question we need to ask is, who has to sign on the contract?
Without making a phone call to the lawyer,
yeah,
right?
Sometimes we know the answer. There's a limited liability corporation. There's tenants in common. There's divorce issues. There's a durable statutory power of attorney that the clients can use, which, by the way, is not like your normal common power of attorney. What is the difference on the sales contract between a general warranty deed and a special warranty deed? And does it really matter if you have title insurance? I've often had that discussion.
Now, the third skill set that you must have is involving institutions.
Like lenders.
Lenders. Property management companies.
And we've had our nightmares with lenders. I'm thinking of one in California that doesn't know that we have different laws in Texas.
No,
and they're sometimes asking us to do things that are not legal in Texas, but the lender in California wants it.
I'm really wondering, is California part of the United States? I'm beginning to wonder.
Well, edit that.
Don't edit that.
And then there's property management companies we have to deal with. There's banks and government guarantors.
Hard private lenders.
Yes, and there is the Houston Association of Realtors and the MLS, which has its rules.
Don't forget the EPA.
The Environmental Protection Agency, which has expanded its powers. And we have city laws that have zoning.
Neighborhood associations, deed restrictions, HOA, civic clubs.
Yeah, we have a situation in our neighborhood where the deed restrictions say that the property can only be used for a single-family home, but somebody built an extra structure, and now they've got 10 apartments against the deed restrictions.
But we can also have 2 horses or 10 poodles, so that's important.
Let me see. Which do I want?
I think you better go with the 10 poodles. They eat less.
We have district management jurisdictions. There are areas of Houston which have district management associations. You can look on your tax bill and see that they sometimes have a small tax.
And some of the areas have city historic area bureaucrats.
Yeah, those were created in Houston, primarily in the Montrose area.
Right, or historical areas. You've run into one of those where they have plaques on the building.
Yeah, we knew when they passed that 5 years ago, it was going to be a nightmare. And also, we had a recent instance where a house was not in a historic district, but the separate house had a historical marker on it, and that even had city rules attached to it.
Then you have the City of Houston Neighborhood Protection Agency.
Yeah, they're slum inspectors. and if, in fact, your house or your apartment building or your office building is really bad, they're going to put a red tag on it, and you better pay attention, because if you go to sell it, there may be some pretty big fees attached, or they may just say, we're going to tear this down, and you're going to pay us for tearing it down.
Then we have city construction permit inspectors. That's for new construction, correct, or additions?
Or remodeling, or rehabs. And, of course, we ran into that last month when we helped with a flooded house that was being remodeled.
Don't forget the Harris County Neighborhood Protection and Environmental Safety.
And we have an issue in our neighborhood concerning a ghost house. which we talked about in a separate episode. And the owner has been in front of the judge, Harris County judge, three times. And three times the judge said, cut the grass and board up the outside so the critters don't get in there.
Yeah, critters.
And the judge
raccoons,
wasn't real.
Rats and ghosts.
And the judge wasn't real happy the third time the owner showed up in front of him.
We also, as mentioned, the county appraisal districts.
And that's always a popular subject when people have to write the check or when they have to protest the value of their house to keep the value down, to reduce their property taxes. And, of course, I am a senior property tax consultant I've been a property tax consultant for 28 years.
Since you were 6 years old. And then we have the flood control district. That's it.
And that's been an issue of discussion recently. And there are now billions of dollars and several hundred projects. And there's been some discussion as to which projects should start and finish first.
Now, I know that you've run into very often an issue where the lenders don't really seem to be sensitive to the closing date in the contract. Do you want to explain?
That varies between lender to lender, and, of course, lenders have personnel that come and go, and those personnel have new policies. But it's not unusual a week before closing for a clerk to review the contract to know that the buyer needs to meet all the policies of the lender and then ask questions and wants more documents, which must be requested through the broker and then communicated through the other broker, and then those documents are secured from the buyer and or the seller.
And at that point, everybody's stressed out because we're only like 1 week away. And you're like, why didn't they ask for this earlier, you know?
And then you give those documents and give those answers to the chain. You know, you give them to your broker, he gives them to the other broker, and he gives them to the clerk. And those docs are reviewed by the clerk. And then finally, the file is handed to a supervisor of the lender, who may ask more questions and ask for more papers from the buyers and the sellers a couple of days from the closing. So do we need to get written permission from the seller to extend the closing date? What happens if the seller has a backup contract at a higher price and we don't get closed by the date that's in our contract?
So sometimes we might run into an issue that we would need to get permission of the seller to extend the closing date. Is that correct?
So, yes. And does the seller have a backup contract at a higher price that'll automatically become active if the closing date on your contract is missed? The seller can take the other contract at the higher price. Because our buyer, our contract has been breached, and thus the buyer automatically loses the property and loses the buyer acquisition costs and the earnest money.
How can you avoid that?
There is language that we can put in the initial, the first contract that'll help us plan for this anguish and allow the buyer to automatically extend the closing date of the contract without asking the permission, the written permission of the seller. I don't think I've ever seen another agent put that in there, but it's a good tool to prevent problems that may be unexpected in the future, especially problems from lenders.
Now, I understand that is especially true of large out-of-state lenders. So ask your client, do you know the city and state of the lender headquarters?
So we can add language to automatically extend the closing date without asking written permission from the seller.
Great.
Okay. Texas is a non-disclosure state like seven others in our fine country, which means that buyers do not have to tell the government or the appraisal district how much they paid for the property.
Yeah, gotta love Texas.
Therefore, yeah, what business is it of the government what we paid for a piece of property?
Right.
Therefore, what language do we add to the purchase contract to prevent the seller and the seller's broker from disclosing to anyone what the sales price was, except, of course, the IRS and their accountant, to stop the seller's broker from disclosing on an online database that is also subscribed to by the county appraisal district? There is language we can put in our contract to make the seller not disclose that sales price. This may save the buyer thousands of dollars in future property taxes. I frequently add this to language in the buyer's contracts. I don't know of any other broker in 25 years who has ever added this language to their buyer's contract when I've represented the seller.
Now, the fourth skill set that brokers should possess is knowledge of the real estate property itself.
Yeah, they have to know about real estate.
That would be a given, yes.
And, of course, they all go to school and they all take classes, but sometimes it just takes experience.
I think experience is the best teacher in the real world on the job training.
We have to know appraisal theory. We have to know the comparable approach, the replacement approach, sometimes referred to as the reproduction approach, depending on the property. And we also have to know the financial income approach. Can you determine the net income of a property and the value of an income-producing property if you do not have the financial information from the seller? I got to tell you what happened once. I had a 26-unit apartment property, and I represented the buyer. And I was asked to go by and meet the seller at the property to get the financials. And the seller handed me a shoebox.
Oh, my. I was going to say a little piece of paper. It's
he handed me a shoebox with receipts.
Oh.
And I handed it back to him, and I said, please give this to your accountant and give us a financial annual net income statement.
Oh, boy.
However, it has gotten to the point now, 25 years later, where I know how much it costs to operate a property, and I can pretty much determine what the revenues should be and what the expenses should be, and therefore what the net income probably is, and from that derive a value. Sometimes we get bad information from sellers, and we have to know what it actually costs to run a property without relying on the information from the seller.
So that will help you determine the future value of a property? When you're figuring if they can spend dollars to increase the rents, is that correct?
We also, in our calculations and our spreadsheets, can put in and plug in repair money and then estimate how much we can raise the rents as a result of increasing value to the people that pay the rent. They would therefore be willing to pay higher rent, or some tenants would be willing to pay higher rent, because we've added value to the property.
Now, I understand there's property databases online or Tell us about that.
These databases have their information, and it propagates to other databases. There are networks of commercial sections where we advertise some of our commercial properties. It propagates out to 75 newspaper websites all over the United States, plus to other commercial property websites. And that's also true of residential websites, where the information that's put in the database automatically goes to a worldwide network of other real estate information. Mm. I often meet agents that do not understand how to use plat maps, which help find property dimensions and give clues about easements, alleys, and landlocked land parcels. Sometimes we can find a property issue or potential problem by looking at plat maps. And we know where those plat maps are, and we know how to use them, and we know how to print them. We have to know about the different types of land surveys and how to read a land survey. So we have to use a magnifying glass sometimes to find the date and the copyright of the survey. Where do you get the meets and bounds? Usually that's on the second page of the survey, and that's necessary for the title commitment and the land survey.
So can you read a title insurance commitment? And where are those red flags?
And do you know where to find the title insurance exceptions to the title commitment? How do you have those exceptions omitted from the insurance? And the answer to that is state law says that we can pay an additional 15% for the title insurance policy and have those exceptions taken out of the title insurance policy.
Good to know.
And that's in the contract.
So the very last skill set that a broker must have is that they must know how to use the technology that's currently available out there. And this is ever-changing. As we know, the IT world is ever-changing, and tools and all computers, et cetera.
And it also requires phone skills, because sometimes our phone acts like a computer.
And there's new phone apps that are developed daily.
Yeah, it's amazing, the phone apps. And there are, of course, electronic signatures. I remember when I used to have to get in the car and deliver contracts 25 years ago and get signatures. And then sometimes we'd have to do that twice a day.
Signatures with a real pen and an in-person person to sign it.
I remember they used to say it had to be in blue ink.
Yes, so the fax machine could read it better.
No, that's not right.
Yes, it is.
No, the fax machine doesn't read blue.
It doesn't? Why do they have to sign them in blue ink?
It's because the county requires it so they can tell the difference between an original and a copy.
Oh, wow. I did not know that. That's the reason they need it in blue.
But that's back in the dark ages.
And now you don't even have to leave your office, or the buyer or the seller leave their comfort, because you could just do it
electronically.
Electronic signature.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting. The Harris County Appraisal District will not accept electronic signatures.
Well, they'll catch up. Don't worry. They're just a little behind the times.
And, of course, we talked about databases and how they propagate. And, of course, the appraisal district subscribes to all those databases, so we want to try to keep our information off those databases if we can. And, of course, there's the multiple listing service. There are commercial databases such as Commercial Gateway and LoopNet and CoStar. And there's all kinds of new trends that are going on the Internet, such as Internet buyers and wholesalers, which we have got two episodes that we talk about these.
Now, how does that affect the buyer or the seller?
These skills that we're talking about affect you and your agent and the buyers and sellers. We have to have these skills because it affects the life of our buyers and sellers. It determines how legal contracts are written. Each of us is different, and all of us have our own special situations. Some real estate brokerage firms have classes to teach agents how to make a listing presentation to prospective buyers and sellers. I'm not one of those brokers. We should just have a conversation, you and me. You will know who to hire by the questions we ask and the answers that we give. Go to our website at eustonius.com to listen to our weekly podcast entitled Snakes, Landmines, and Grass Fires, or watch our short videos when we rant and talk about real estate nightmares. Phone us at 281-236-8189.
Thank you. Very enlightening. Go to eustonius.com, Houston, IUS.com.
Thank you. Goodbye.